Well, I'm pleased to welcome Chris McClellan to the Caregiver Smile Summit. He is founder and CEO of Whole Care Network, executive producer and host of the Healing Ties Radio, which I've been pleased to be a guest on a couple times. Affectionately known nationwide, as you can see, is in this picture that went soon, the bow tie guy. He has 10 years of personal family caregiving experience. He started a caregiving blog entitled The Purple Jacket after his partner's diagnosis of esophageal cancer in 2011. And he continues to be an ardent advocate for caregivers and care partners through his blog and radio show, Healing Ties. You know, the story of Chris and his partner, Richard Schiffer, was chronicled in a 2015 Pulitzer Prize nominated story, In Sickness and in Health, A Couple's Final Journey, about their journey of caregiving. The story told the challenges that LGBT partners have in dealing with the medical and legal system, but also told the love story and joy that Richard's last years had on their relationship. Out of this experience, he has written a compelling book, What's the Deal with Caregiving, that informs caregivers about how to deal with the challenges that they will encounter regardless of sexual orientation, family situation, or age. His master's degree thesis, entitled Spiral of Science, Caregiving, Stress, and Its Impact in the Workplace, was accepted by the faculty at Gonzaga University, where Chris earned a master's degree in leadership and communication in 2016. And I'm pleased to welcome Chris to the Caregiver Smile Summit. Hi, Chris.
Greetings, Anthony. It's great to be here with you.
It's great to turn the tables and have yes. you as a guest.
You're doing great, by the way.
Well, thank you. So let's just start by, your caregiving story is chronicled in 2015 Pulitzer Prize story, as we mentioned. Can you talk about that experience for us?
Well, I'm very grateful for the Sun Sentinel for actually doing a story on us. They approached us, I'd say 6-7 months before Richard's esophagus cancer came back. And while they were with us, that is when really the story began, because his cancer came back. It came back with a vengeance, and they kind of walked the journey with us. And I'm fortunate in the sense that I have such a special memory of Richard through this story, but it's been seen by over 400,000 people worldwide. We still get comments about the story today. And it reminds me about the importance of caregivers as they feel comfortable to share their story, because not only is it healing, it helps other caregivers as well.
Yes, and I've read the story, and I recommend it to everybody. So we often hear about caregiver stress and isolation. You know, what challenges did you face, and what did you do to combat isolation?
Well, isolation just happens. You don't really recognize it in the middle of your caregiving duties. But suddenly you look back and you say, goodness, you know, I'm not seeing the friends and family that I usually did, or I'm turning down opportunities for socialization because you're so focused on taking care of your care partner. For me, it was a steady progression, and actually Richard was involved in it as well. He got to the point where he didn't want to really go out or do anything. So it just kind of progressed, and before you know it, we were isolated, and then caregiving ended, and that the isolation intensified after that.
Well, that's interesting that it intensified afterwards. I know I was caregiver to my mom for 2.5 years, and we did keep our social networks pretty active. And she was in an independent living facility, but I got to tell you, it was a huge adjustment afterwards, especially with Catholic guilt of having all this freedom to be able to go do things. I almost felt that she was on my shoulder the whole time. Yes. The next time I took a vacation. So, you know, this idea of what's next after caregiving is something we know you've thought about. Can you talk about the challenges that care partners and yourself, face?
Sure. I personally believe that there's two very similar aspects to caregiving that everybody experiences. There's a beginning and there's an end. And in most cases, we're not prepared for either one of these life-changing events. You know, when you're in the midst of caregiving, you don't really, you think in the background, well, eventually this is going to end, but we don't know when it's going to end. And if we could be cognizant, of course, I'm talking retrospectively now, if we could be cognizant of the fact that, you know, life is going to change for two people or more during this journey, then in one sense, it's not that you can be prepared 100%, but you'll be aware, which will make the transition maybe a little bit easier when it happens.
Got it. So in your book, you talk about acceptance after caregiving ends. How do you get to acceptance? I know it's taken me a while, and you kind of go in and out. So I'm curious how you did it and really how you became interested in this topic, because it's so important and few people give it kind of the due.
Well, you know, I think there's, before you get to acceptance, I believe that there's three other common emotions, feelings that caregivers will experience when caregiving is over. There's relief. You know, there's relief that it is over. This is hard. There is sadness. Sadness that, you know, the life that you once had is now gone and two lives have been forever changed. And then you just mentioned it earlier, because we share the same Catholic guilt, you know, guilt of moving on, that, you know, the person that you cared for is no longer here. And that transition, you know, as you move on with your life. But then you get to acceptance. And, you know, for me, acceptance came about a year and a half, 2 years later. It came through advocacy, through writing the book, through finishing the thesis. They were all centered around caregiving and our story. So I think acceptance is going to be different for everyone when they reach it. But I kind of look at it like this: when you think of watering a plant. In order for a plant to get new blooms, they have to be watered. And for caregivers, especially after caregiving ends, you have to find that mechanism, that tool that will water you so that you can have a new bloom. But it just be cognizant of the sense that it will happen in your time, and that's okay.
Yeah. Everybody will probably go through this at some point. And I think to the extent that while you're going through it, you can still somehow keep a sense of yourself and take care of your own health, all the things we preach all the time. You may have a better time of it sooner after the caregiving. Not that it's going to be super easy, but I'm thinking some of that might help.
So. Well, we get into this role as a caregiver, you know, I don't know, I've not met anybody that this was something that was on their bucket list of something that they wanted to do. I mean, caregiving happens because of an unfortunate accident or an untimely diagnosis. But when you get into it, you know, I was lucky. I cared for somebody that I truly loved. So I'm able to take that experience and share that because I feel it's so important. But I'm also cognizant of the fact that there are many caregivers out there that are caring for people that they've had issues with, whether it's parents or siblings or spouses. And I think that's when you kind of set the baggage aside and just take care of the person that's right in front of you.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you know, I my own personal story is I did take the hospice counselor up on, you know, the year of support that they offer. Now I only went once because she taught me a very valuable lesson the first time I went, and it had to do all about the Catholic guilt and why I was acting in some ways that I was acting, because I was acting as if my mother was still here and calling the shots, so to speak. It was quite a revelation. And once I realized that, it sort of eased the burden. It was kind of interesting. So I would encourage caregivers, to the extent, especially if they've been involved in a hospice situation, there is, you know, counseling available to folks. And if they need to reach out and talk to other people, I think they really should. So,
you know, and what's interesting about that, Anthony, is you know, there's a lot of support groups out there for caregivers. You can, I know here in South Florida, I can list a number of different hospitals that provide support groups. But what I've also learned in the sense is that folks like ourselves who are in after caregiving, some of those folks are still going to these caregiving groups because they feel such a connection to them. Yet in a strange way, they're also disconnected because they're not in active caregiving mode. You know, it's where do you find this group? Where do you find the group that can support you? I'm a big advocate of bereavement groups, but I think there's an opportunity here to create a whole segment of support for folks like ourselves who are in after caregiving, because in a sense, the needs are really different. We've gotten past the bereavement period, but we're still trying to dig ourselves out of the isolation. And I think, you know, support after caregiving ends is equally as important as it is while you're in the midst of caregiving.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you mentioned a kind of a good segue here into healthcare providers. You know, there are statistics out there that show that only 1 in 3 providers actually ask the caregiver for their input into the health of a loved one, and only 1 in 6 actually ask the caregiver themselves, you know, how they're doing. So, you know, I think there's an opportunity for caregivers to step back and realize, you know, that when you engage care partners, that not only is it going to do great good in society, but, you know, it's going to have a halo effect on who they are and their brand and the word of mouth. So what would you suggest for health providers around these issues?
You know, I am amazed when I hear that health providers do not acknowledge the caregiver, because the caregiver is going to make their job a lot easier. The caregiver is with the care partner 24/7. They know more about them than the doctor does. I would just go in and a couple of things. Make sure you introduce yourself to the doctor as the caregiver. If you need to put the hammer down and say power of attorney, healthcare proxy, do all those things, that is helpful too. But establish a relationship early on with any of the physicians that you come in contact with, because we all know in caregiving, you're going to deal with multiple physicians, and they're not always going to talk to one another. But when you take the lead, because you're really, the caregiver is really the one who is, I hate to use this business expression, but the caregiver is the CEO of the care team. And without the knowledge of the caregiver, the doctor can't do their job. And if the doctor's not open to this, I don't know, maybe you need to look for another physician.
Right. Absolutely. We have somebody talking about how do you advocate for your own health during the summit as well. So when do you start preparing for life after being a care partner, and how do you prepare?
Well, you know, Anthony, a lot of this I learned after caregiving is over, and it might seem kind of strange by my answer here, but I think the minute you realize that you're in a caregiving situation, you need to be looking ahead. You need to be planning ahead, because unfortunately it will come to an end. And I can tell you just from my personal experience, the one person who was asking me to take better care of myself was Richard, the person I was taking care of, because he wanted to be assured that he had somebody, myself, that was going to be there for him. So I think we have to have the mindset that, yes, this is probably going to end. We don't know when it's going to end, but we've got to take care of ourselves too, so you avoid the pitfalls like we did with the isolation, poor diet, finding, you know, all of a sudden you got to find new friends too, because you've isolated from your friends, and now you've got to move, you know, you're finding a whole set of new friends. And it's really embarking on a new life after caregiving ends. We got to be prepared for it while we're in the middle of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Good advice. And certainly a loving partner that you had. So you did mention the isolation. So why do relationship with friends and colleagues change in the midst of this? And, what impact do these changes have on your life after the caregiving ends?
You know, I think it happens in a lot of ways, Anthony. It happens in the middle of the caregiving experience. There, some of your friends may not they may not know how to ask how they could help. A lot of caregivers aren't comfortable in asking for help. So when you have those two combustible avenues crossing each other, what usually happens? People just kind of back away. They don't, you know, they don't want to bother, but they're concerned, but they think, you know, I'm just going to leave this alone. And before you know it, 4, 6, 8 months have passed by and you've lost connection with these folks. Caregiving has intensified. It's, you know, it's hard enough just to get up and go to work, and then it ends. And the folks that you've been in touch with, you know, they don't know what to do. They're nowhere to be found. And I think it really comes back full circle in the caregiver feeling comfortable of asking for help and reaching out to people who are willing to help. It's about creating that care team that's supportive during and after the caregiving experience.
Great advice. So any last words of advice or counseling you'd like to give our care partners who are watching this?
Well, I think I'd like to end with this. You know, I believe personally that there's no greater honor that's bestowed on us to be a caregiver, especially as life transitions. But with that, we have to be mindful that our life is going to continue. And when we're mindful of that, we're going to set ourselves up for life after caregiving in a way that that is loving and kind and in a great remembrance of the person that we were caring for.
Well, Chris, I want to thank you. I'm glad I had the chance to interview you and for the Caregiver Smile Summit. And I really value you as a colleague and a friend, and thanks for being on the summit.
I appreciate it, Anthony. It's great to be with you.